Crónicas del Antropoceno, la época humana y sus consecuencias, narrada en tiempo real.
Hola, ¿qué tal? Y bienvenidos a Crónicas del Antropoceno. Yo soy Víctor González Quintanilla y esta tarde vamos a tener una entrevista especial con Brooke Besesen, autora del libro Vaquita Marina, que estuvo aquí en los pasillos de la Feria Internacional del Libro de Guadalajara en el 2023 y tuvimos oportunidad de platicar con ella de cerca. Un apunte, esta entrevista será en inglés. El día de hoy el episodio será en inglés. Si para ti es más fácil verlo subtitulado, también te invitamos a que lo consultes en el canal de YouTube del Museo de Ciencias Ambientales. Así que vamos con Brooke Besesen, que nos tiene una historia sobre la vaquita marina entre la urgencia y la esperanza. Today we are going to be recording in English. We're going to be talking with Brooke Besesen about her book Vaquita Marina. Welcome to the Chronicles of the Anthropocene, Brooke.
Thank you so much, Victor.
Well, let's start talking about your relationship with nature and as a biologist, as an ecologist, all the way up to when you got here to Mexico's oceans and Mar de Cortés, and you found the situation with Vaquita.
Well, I think that story, my story of Vaquita, begins in 2008 when I was traveling into Mexico with a friend. And we were in Puerto Peñasco, which is a dusty desert town on the shores of Alto Golfo, the northern region of the Gulf of California. And there I went to a research station called SEDO and first learned about this enchanting and critically endangered porpoise. I later would learn that vaquitas have existed in Alto Golfo for more than 3 million years, but that at one point there were as many as 5,000 of them. But at that point, when I first learned about them at SEDO, there were only 250 left. And the story has become increasingly dire as the years have progressed.
Increasingly dire as the story of many other aspects of the world we inhabit. This urgency to know and act upon the things that we humans do to our environment. What did you find? What does your book narrate about our relationship with specifically the porpoise, la vaquita marina?
Well, I guess I would say to start that I think that vaquita is the epitome of what is happening on our planet right now in terms of the Anthropocene. It's the story of many other endangered animals around the world. It is a universal story, if you will. But I think that for me, when I began my journey, so I learned about them in 2008, but I didn't start writing the book until 2016. And in that interim, they had gone from the 250 approximately down to 60. And it was then that I really began to recognize how quickly we can lose species, how quickly this dramatic decline in world populations of wildlife is unfolding. And it's been a scary, disturbing, and at moments it has felt quite hopeless. And yet, of course, there is always hope. And so this has been my journey, has been seeking the hope amidst the crumbling building. You know, where can we find hope in not just our thinking, but in our communications? That said, I feel like we have to be cautious because we want to tell people the truth. We want to tell them that the world is crumbling. It's the truth. We also don't want to overwhelm them. So we want to tell them that there is hope. But we don't want them to be like, oh, it's hopeful, everything's fine, let's not do anything. And the truth is neither of those are true. And they are both perfectly true. So we're trying to navigate a space, both as biologists and as science communicators, that tells what is happening. Do you see what I'm saying? It's without without swaying too far to the doom and gloom or too far to the, it can all be fixed. We have to try to stay in the reality of that. And that even that reality is complex.
This space between hope and urgency. There is hope, and we do have to do have that hope as a guide, but there is also urgency, and it's complicated, and it's a slippery slope to find a path. But please share us some of the hope that you have found, and in your journey investigating and knowing the people around the story of Vaquita, what have you seen? What have you found? Please share us some of that hope.
So a lot of the hope that I have has come from two areas. One area is that of the public. When I have gone to San Felipe and I've talked with people, they care about Vaquita. They care very much. That animal is right there in the waters near their home, and they want very much to help protect it. The fishermen who are working with conservation, who are working to help scientists, they too give me tremendous hope. They have stood as heroes in an environment of often crime and even danger, and promoted conservation because they understand that their future and the futures of their family depends on sustainable marine resources. So those folks on the ground, they're in the space who care, who are smart and capable and compassionate, they give me hope. And then the other area of hope comes from the science. So the science watched Vaquita, as I said, go from 5,000 to 250 to 60, and now we are at 10 individuals. 10 individuals. It sounds pretty hopeless, doesn't it? But no, the science tells us, the recent science shows, that Vaquita can survive. The species can recover with protection. And this hope comes in twofold. One is that the scientists have now produced three robust studies that all show that Vaquita is not predisposed to genetic decline. So people always say, oh, there's 10 animals, it's hopeless, give it up, give up the ghost, they're gone. Even if we keep them around, the inbreeding will end up being their demise. But no, it's not true. Of 50 species that the scientists studied in one particular study, Vaquita had the lowest amount of variance in their genetic code, which is to say that over thousands of years, because they've always lived in an isolated population, they have purged their lethal alleles, their deadly genetic code. And so 10 vaquitas can recover the species. 10 will become 20, will become 30, 40. So this is tremendously hopeful. And then the second part of that is that the first time we hit 10 individuals was in about 2019. Some of these numbers get a little bit tricky because the science is done and then it's communicated, and it depends on which of those dates you're talking about. When was it accomplished, or when was it presented or communicated? But let's say around 2010, the numbers come sliding down, crashing down, literally like a 50% decline per year. Just horror, horror, horror. And then all of a sudden they hit 10, and now they have stayed at 10 for about 4 years. Everybody in the world, because Vaquita is on the global stage, everyone is watching. Everyone was braced for Vaquita's extinction. 10 individuals, 50% decline, how many years is that, right? And yet they stayed at 10. How is that possible? Well, the scientists began speculating that Vaquitas have adapted to better avoid gillnets, which is their only threat, gillnets. So they're either that small group that remains has some rare genetic ability to detect nets better, or they are behaviorally adapting. But either way, they can pass that skill on to their offspring. So that is hopeful. And then they are still having babies. Babies are seen every year, as recently as a few months ago. So we have healthy babies, we have good genes, We have unspoiled habitat. The animals are doing well if we can get gill nets out of the water. It's the one and only thing we need to do to save Vaquita.
Well, that's hopeful. That yes. is hopeful. I was not aware of this genetic predisposition that makes it possible, even that possible, to start with. And this new behavior that maybe may be the cause of at least 10 surviving all the nets, that's also very hopeful. Now, tell me a little bit more about the urgency. Because, yes, life is enduring there, but it's very, very slim possibility because 10 individuals are still very few. And what's the urgency and what have you found in the authorities, fishermen? Is there any way that we can expect things to change for the good in human behavior around Vaquita? Not only nature is saving them, their nature, their own nature, their behavior and their genes, and them having babies and avoiding gill nets. Are we helping?
Well, we're helping some. We need to help more and immediately. You're right. 10 animals cannot survive against 1,000 gill nets. That's not reasonable statistics, right? So we still have to try to get those gill nets out of the water. And that is where the action has been over the recent years. So in two different ways. One has been that the government has had a program to try to extract gill nets from the water. They try to locate them, find them, and pull them out of the water. And I will add here that I have been witness to the extraction of one of these gill nets out of the water. And the amount of bycatch was mind-blowing. Bycatch is the unintended capture of a gill net. So gill nets are designed, the size of the mesh is designed to catch a particular species, but we call that target capture. But the number of animals, the number of species that get entangled and drown in gill nets is endless. Almost every other type of marine life also dies in gill nets. And especially they can become lost or abandoned and float around for years, just basically collecting bodies. And then in that case, you can imagine almost any type of marine species you can imagine will be inside that gill net, that ghost net is what they call it. So the government has been trying to get those gill nets out of the water. And then and by the way, that unintended capture is called bycatch. So Vaquita is bycatch in the gill nets that are set for fisheries, either legal, both legal and illegal. So the government's trying to get those out. And then the recent thing that they have done that seems to be helping is that they have sunk a number of concrete blocks, giant concrete blocks, and each block has a hook on it, like a metal rod sticking up out of it with a hook at the end, and that rod is about 3 feet tall. And then they've put, I believe, thousands of them all around the Vaquita territory, and the idea is that those hooks will catch any gill nets that happen to be in the area. And what it's designed to do is deter the fishermen who don't want to lose their gill nets. They're afraid to drop their nets in waters that they're going to get hooked. And it seems to have helped to some degree. But again, as we said before, gill nets are really ubiquitous in the waters of Alto Golfo where Vaquita lives. And Vaquitas can't survive against thousands of them. And those nets that get hooked and lost can simply be replaced. So the urgency now is not just to get gill nets out of water, but to set up a system, a structure that will keep gill nets out of the water. And that must be making gill nets banned, enforcing that ban, because they've been banned for years, and even the legal fishers just ignore the rule. So we need a ban on gill nets, and then most importantly, we need alternative fishing gear so that fishermen can switch to an alternative. Right now they have no options because they haven't been legalized, they haven't been implemented by INAPESCA and CONAPESCA. So if we can if we can get alternative gear and make that mandatory and make it required to switch and ban all the gill nets, that will get them out of the water permanently, really, and still leave a sustainable lifestyle for the fishermen in the area. That is what the urgency is for. We need that.
Brooke, so you wrote a book, and you are presenting that book, Vaquita, or in Spanish, Vaquita Marina, in the International Book Fair of Guadalajara. Tell me a little bit more about the book so people that are listening to us can know about it, can search it wherever they are listening to, and tell me about your experience presenting the book here and elsewhere, and your experience in Guadalajara.
Well, first I have to say I love Guadalajara. It's been beautiful, and the people have been so incredibly welcoming. It's just feels like you've walked into a family. It's just amazing here, the whole Phil team and all the folks that I've been working with here. So I wrote this book, which was originally published in English by Island Press in the United States. And then it was translated by a wonderful independent publisher here in Mexico, Grano de Sal. And they embraced the book, and then they are part of a team, a coalition of people who share science and culture through a brilliant new magazine called Obsidiana. And they collaborate to share science and culture with Mexico through numerous avenues. And I wrote an article for Obsidiana earlier this year, their inaugural volume. And thereafter, the publisher and Obsidiana all and the Mexico Citizen Library all became very engaged in trying to help Vaquita. And so they brought me here to Phil. They flew me from Arizona to come speak, and I have four presentations while I'm here this week. I had one this morning for students, and the room was so full that they had to, they were trying to figure out how to solve it because they couldn't fit everyone. They ended up, we were in a salon in a room with a screen, and I was at the front. And then outside that room, in the whole lobby of this entire area, section of Phil, they set up quickly a whole nother section where they broadcast my talk out into the hall, and that section was full too. These were all young people. So the reception here has been incredible, which is a gift for me as an author, but it is really important for Vaquita, right? Because these are the future of Mexico, these kids who are interested and passionate. They are compassionate, and I believe that they seemed or appeared to be very, very engaged in the story. So yet another bit of hope.
Excellent. I'm so glad that you say that about the lots of young people in the book fair, coming to the presentation of the book, knowing about the story. I'm sure that most of them were aware of the situation with Vaquita and the situation with the environment, because young people are, but specifically coming close and in contact with you and with your book, I'm sure that it's going to help a lot for them to know about it. And yes, they are new citizens that are going to be voters, that are going to be consumers, that are going to be involved in a lot of things that have to change. So that's hope also. Brooke, thank you so much for coming here to the interview with Chronicles from the Anthropocene. Thank you so much for coming to Guadalajara. And thank you for your work. Thank you for your book. Thank you for taking care of the world that we share.
Thank you, and it's my opportunity to thank you for communicating and sharing these kinds of ideas with all types of thinkers, biologists, authors, all of the folks who care and are trying to make a difference in the world today, and you are the conduit for them, so thank you for that.
My pleasure. Bueno, pues esa es la entrevista con Brooke Besesen, la historia de esta bióloga que se acercó al mar de Cortés a conocer todo este fenómeno triste pero esperanzador a la vez, complejo como son las cosas en el antropoceno, del tema de la vaquita marina. Cuando ella llegó nos explicaba, había muchas, 300, ahora solamente quedan 10, pero aún así hay esperanza, y esa esperanza tiene como base la ciencia, que nos dice que aún 10 especímenes pudieran ser viables para construir una nueva población, y estos 10 especímenes al parecer han desarrollado habilidades conductuales que los han llevado a librar la muerte en las trampas agalleras, en las redes agalleras que usan los pescadores ilegales de Totoaba. Esa es una de los visos de esperanza que encuentra Brooke Besesen y que narra en su libro. Y otro que nos dice que le dio mucho gusto es que en la Feria Internacional del Libro en Guadalajara se encontró con muchísimos jóvenes interesados en conocer esta historia. Estuvo en una presentación con 1,000 jóvenes, que en realidad fueron muchos más. Se llenó el salón, tuvieron que poner espacios afuera con pantallas y con sillas afuera porque la presentación estuvo bastante nutrida. Y eso ella también nos dice, que además de que le da gusto, también le da esperanza. Eso es todo por hoy. Recuerda que estamos en las plataformas de podcast y en YouTube, y también puedes contactarnos a través de las redes sociales del Museo de Ciencias Ambientales, así tal cual. Es el museo que construye la Universidad de Guadalajara aquí en Guadalajara, Jalisco, México, cada día avanzando un poco más, pero por el momento haciendo esta conexión a través del podcast, a través de las plataformas digitales para narrar la época humana y sus consecuencias.
Esto fue Crónicas del Antropoceno, una producción del Museo de Ciencias Ambientales de la Universidad de Guadalajara. Gracias por escuchar.